Iris for St. Patrick's Day this March 17th, 2024, Sunday. I hope you all are having a wonderful day. Let's see what the Sioux City Journal has in store for today. We'll also be reading material from Saturday's paper, as there just isn't enough fresh content in every Sunday paper. All right, let's take a look at the five-day forecast so we can see what we have in store for the next 5 days as we transition into spring, but winter still kind of wants to hold on in some ways. Today it'll be breezy and cooler, winds from the north-northwest, 15 to 25 miles per hour, and a high of just 40 degrees. Tonight it'll be mainly clear and cold, winds from the north-northwest, 8 to 16 miles per hour, and a low of 17 degrees. Monday, mostly sunny, winds northwest, 8 to 16 miles per hour, high of 46, low of 33. Tuesday, breezy and not as cool, winds northwest, 12 to 25 miles per hour, high of 59, low of 30. Wednesday, cooler with clouds and sun, winds from the northeast, 7 to 14 miles per hour, high of 39, low of 25. Thursday, a thick cloud cover, winds from the east, 10 to 20 miles per hour, high of 43, and a low of 27 degrees. All right, let's now turn to the front page of today's Sunday paper. Headline, Siouxland Scouts Make Their Pitch. Cookies for Sale. Subheadline, the annual cookie sale continues through March 24th. Could you refuse a sales pitch like one? Quote, would you like to buy some Girl Scout cookies? They are really yummy. I am just trying to support the Girl Scouts, said 7-year-old Ava Fegan, a Brownie Scout and a member of Troop 5157-570 in Sioux City. Quote, I say thank you for buying Girl Scout cookies and have a nice day. The annual Girl Scout cookie sales continue through March 24. Troop 51570 has a goal of 4,000 boxes. Troop leader Amber Bliss said the girls have met 99.55% of that goal. Quote, when I started, cookies were not a direct sale, so we were order taking and they all came in at once, Bliss said. She has been a scout leader for 16 years. Quote, now this time of year, we go strong for about a month and a half. It's a direct sale now, which means we get order cookies and we can have them on hand and the girls go out and sell. It's a very, very busy time. I'm exhausted and tired most of the time. However, the girls' excitement, enthusiasm, and goal setting and reaching their goals is what keeps me going. The troop's top salesperson is one of the youngest troop members. 6-year-old Ira Driesen is a Daisy Scout. She has sold 560 boxes of Girl Scout cookies. Quote, it is fun for my family and my sister sometimes helps me, Ira said. When asked how many boxes of cookies she has sold, the little girl starts to giggle. Quote, I'm supposed to get 800, Ira said. Quote, it's hard work. She goes out and she does what are called lemonade stands, where she sets up Girl Scout cookie booth by herself with her parents. Every nice day she is out there working, Bliss said of Aria. It is the fifth cookie sale for most of the girls in the troop. Quote, they all get to set their own troop goals. Every year in January we do some financial literacy badges, so we definitely talk about the whys. Why do we sell cookies? Bliss said. We talk about what kinds of things do and what we want to get out of it. And the main goal every year is camping. So most of our funds to go to everyday needs at troop meetings and to go to big campouts. Selling cookies to help cover the cost of troop activities started as early as 1917, according to the Girl Scouts website. Quote, the Mistletoe Troop in Muskogee, Oklahoma, baked cookies and sold them in its high school cafeteria as a service project, the organization's website says. The youth focus group was founded in 1912 by Juliet Gordon Lowe. Sammy Anderson, a 12-year-old junior scout in Troop 51570, has set her goal at 500 boxes. Quote, last time I tallied them all up, I have sold 180-something. Amber says, I am a great salesman because of my loud voice. I've been doing this since kindergarten, actually, and I would hit up family first, and then I would just go door-to-door trying to see if anyone would buy, Sammy explained. Junior Scout Kat Wotan, age 10, is plugging along selling cookies. Quote, my grandma has been helping me. We are doing pretty well, Kat said. I love Girl Scouts because you can do lots of fun things. One time we actually got to sleep at the zoo right next to the penguins. The girls compete for rewards based on the number of boxes they can sell. Quote, we talk about setting realistic goals, Bliss said. It is really hard work. The girls learn about motivation and excitement in reaching goals. Isabel Geed, a 9-year-old Brownie Scout, has sold 100 boxes. Quote, you definitely need passion and respect and a good attitude to sell cookies, Geed said. All right, let's return back to the front page of today's paper, where we look to revenue and taxes, fun stuff. Headline, Iowa's revenue projected to dip this year. Subheadline, slight uptick expected in fiscal year 2025, from Des Moines. Iowa's tax receipts will come in slightly lower than expected this year, but revenues will hold steady in 2025, according to the latest projections from a state panel that estimates the state's annual revenue. The projections are critical as state lawmakers begin the work of crafting a budget for the upcoming fiscal year, using the projections by the Revenue Estimating Conference to determine how much they can spend. Income tax cuts for individuals and corporations will continue to drive down revenue from those sources, but state officials expect increasing consumer spending to increase revenues from sales tax. The panel, which met on Friday, expects Iowa's total revenue to be $9.63 billion this year, a decrease of about $219 million from last year and about $120 million lower than state officials estimated in December. In fiscal year 2025, which begins July 1st, revenue is expected to reach $9.7 billion, an increase of about 0.7% from 2024. The number will be down about $100 million from 2022, when lawmakers enacted income tax cuts that put Iowa on path to a flat 3.9% tax rate in 2026. State lawmakers will need to use the panel's last projection from December when deciding how to spend the state's tax dollars, because state law requires the lower of the two estimates to be used to create the budget. The 2025 estimate in December was $9.64 billion. Iowa Department of Management Director Craig Paulson, who sits on the estimating board representing the governor's office, said conservative spending by the Republican-led state government has put Iowa in a strong financial position. Paulson said there is room to further cut taxes, which Iowa's Republican leaders have called for. Quote, thanks to this fiscal restraint, we think there is no reason to think the state cannot continue down the path of leaving more money in Iowans' pockets, Paulson said. In 2026, the projection gets more uncertain as two state agencies are nearly $1 billion apart in their initial projections for that year's income. The Department of Management and the Nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency each submit projections ahead of the board's quarterly meetings, and the panel has to reach an agreement between the two. The Department of Management predicted a 3.5% revenue increase between 2025 and 2026, while Legislative Services Agency predicted a 5.4% reduction. The panel eventually settled on a 1% decrease estimate, which would put revenue that year at $9.6 billion. Paulson said he expects a larger increase in the economy as the economy continues to grow. Jennifer Acton, the Fiscal Services Director for the Legislative Services Agency, said she expects recent tax cuts and more refunds because of the way corporations are taxed to drag down the state's revenue. Lawmakers, Governor react to latest estimates. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said the Friday estimates show Iowa is in a solid financial position. Quote, even with the significant national economic challenges created by so-called Bidenomics, Iowa's economy remains strong and steady, she said in a statement provided by a spokesperson. Reynolds has proposed a bill that would accelerate the 2022 tax cuts and reach a lower tax rate faster. Under Reynolds' proposal, Iowa taxpayers would pay a flat 3.5% income tax starting in 2025. Reynolds has proposed spending $8.9 billion from the state's general fund in next year's budget, which would represent a 4.7% spending increase from the 2024 budget. The state ended 2023 with a $1.83 billion budget surplus. The state's taxpayer relief fund, which is used to fund tax cuts, is estimated to reach $3.6 billion this fiscal year, according to Reynolds' budget recommendation. Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker, Republican of Grimes, said the projections show the success of Republicans' fiscal policy in cutting income taxes. Quote, our agenda has resulted in a strong Iowa economy, a balanced budget, almost $4 billion in taxpayer relief fund, and a surplus this year of roughly $1 billion. Whitaker said in a statement, now is the time to continue to implement these policies, and Senate Republicans look forward to building on our success this year with the House and Governor Reynolds to enhance the truly great condition of our state. In written statements, legislative Democrats criticized Republicans for failing to pass a school funding plan despite the legal deadline passing in February. Lawmakers have not passed a budget for state aid to schools as they continue to work out a controversial policy to overhaul the state's area education agencies. Representative Timmy Brown, Powers of Waterloo, the top Democrat on the House Budget Committee, said legislators should be pursuing an agenda that funds public schools and increases Iowans' wages. Quote, "We believe it's time to make public schools our top priority again," she said in a statement. "Today's budget estimate confirms there is no fiscal reason for GOP lawmakers to continue stalling funding for public schools. It's all just politics for them. As we learned again this week with 1,200 Iowans losing their jobs in Perry, more tax giveaways to corporations than the richest Iowans don't give Iowans the wages or job security they deserve." Senator Janet Peterson, Democrat of Des Moines, said in a statement that lawmakers should focus on passing a budget over divisive social policies. Quote, "We owe it to our constituents to fund our public schools, pass a balanced and responsible state budget, and then adjourn for the year," said Peterson, the ranking member of the Senate Budget Committee. Quote, "Iowans aren't asking for more politics and culture wars. They're asking for a government that does its job," end quote. All right, let's now turn to page A2 of Sunday's paper, where we look to Iowa lawmakers and what's on the agenda for the folks in Des Moines. All right, from Des Moines. "After a key deadline passed this week in the Iowa legislature, narrowing the bills eligible for consideration, lawmakers are turning their attention to a smaller pool of legislation and beginning the work on tax and budget policy. This week was the second final week at the Capitol, where House bills needed to pass out of a Senate committee and vice versa in order to remain alive for the rest of the session. Leaders have other tools to keep bills alive that have not met that requirement, though. While several high-profile bills died in committee this week, many others remain alive and will get more consideration in the coming weeks. Bills to reorganize the state's boards and commissions, change election deadlines, and regulate consumable hemp products are all among the bills that remain eligible for consideration. Friday marked the end of the session's 10th week. April 16th is the 100th day and the target end date for the session, though the session often goes longer than anticipated. Area education agencies. The biggest piece of unfinished business on lawmakers' agenda is the proposal to overhaul the state's area education agencies, which provide special education support to school districts around the state. Governor Kim Reynolds proposed the bill at the beginning of the legislative session, but it has taken a winding path through the lawmaking process as it has met resistance even from lawmakers within our own party. Reynolds' initial proposal called for school districts to receive their full state and federal special education dollars rather than that funding being sent to the AEAs. The schools would then have the option to contract with the AEAs or a third party to provide education support for students with disabilities. The bill would also have directed funding for other education services that currently goes to the AEAs, to school districts, and cut a property tax stream that funds the AEA's media services. The bill would also have increased salaries for beginning and veteran teachers. After tabling Reynolds' proposal, House Republicans wrote their own plan to change the AEA structure and oversight, keep AEAs as the sole provider of special education support, and phase in changes over a few years. House lawmakers passed that bill in February, but the Senate did not take it up for consideration. The Senate has passed an amended version of Reynolds' proposal out of a committee, but has not yet taken a floor vote on the bill. Lawmakers will need to bridge the significant gap between the two proposals in order to send a bill to Reynolds' desk to be signed into law. House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican of New Hartford, told reporters on Thursday that he has been having regular conversations with Senate leaders and the governor on the proposals. Quote, "Right now we're having good conversations," he said. "But we feel pretty strongly that whatever we do with AEAs, we've been pretty clear in the House, we wanted to continue to provide charity for special ed parents and students and school districts." Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitaker, a Republican from Grimes, said his members have had a variety of concerns about the bill, but he believes Senate Republicans are close to coming to a consensus. Quote, "Our bill is vastly different than the governor's original bill. It's vastly different than the House. And so that's what makes it a little bit harder," he said. "We've got to get our own bill off the floor, hopefully soon, to really start that conversation to see where it ends." Reynolds' office on Friday shared a Des Moines Register op-ed by two school superintendents school arguing for changes to the AEA system. Reynolds has pointed to national test scores lagging behind other states to argue that the AEA system is in need of reform. This quote, "The system must provide transparency and accountability to school districts, those closest to our students, and drive consistency across the AEA regions to improve services for students with disabilities," Reynolds said when the House passed its bill. Quote, "That's what I've heard from over 100 school districts as I've traveled the state, and I look forward to more conversations as the legislation moves forward." Democrats have repeatedly called for Republican lawmakers to slow the proposal down and form a task force to study the issue before making any major changes to the system. The proposal is complicated by the need for lawmakers to pass a bill setting the K-12 school funding level for the coming school year, which lawmakers have not yet done despite being required by law to pass it in February. The House has passed a bill to increase school funding by 3%, but the Senate has not passed any school funding proposal. Legislative leaders said these two issues are dependent on one another and must be decided on together. Both Grassley and Whitver said they hope to get the funding passed soon. School districts were required to submit their draft budget statements to their county auditor on Friday, despite not receiving concrete funding amounts from the legislature. Quote, "The failure to deal with this means that many of us may see an increase in our property taxes in our local communities because the state has failed to provide that funding that schools need in order to put their budget together in a very responsible way," said Senate Minority Leader Pam Yockum, Democrat of Dubuque, this week. Tax policy. Republican leaders have said further cutting Iowa's income tax is a top goal for this session, and lawmakers have started the work on that this year. Reynolds proposed a tax bill this year that would, among other things, set Iowa's individual income tax rate for this year at a flat 3.65% and lower to 3.5% in 2025. Reynolds signed a bill in 2022 setting the state's individual income tax rate in the path to a flat 3.9% by 2026. Republican lawmakers have put forward multiple tax proposals this year, including a proposed constitutional amendment that would require a flat income tax and require a two-thirds vote by the legislature to increase taxes. Whitver said he wants to accelerate the existing income tax cuts. "Well, we have a real opportunity to expedite some of the cuts that we've made the last couple of years, whether that's bringing it to the start of 2024 and expedite those cuts to the beginning of this year, or if we start them next year, that there's a chance to expedite the cuts that we've made," Whitver said. Democrats have argued the Republicans' recent tax cuts have disproportionately benefited the wealthy and haven't done enough to help low-income Iowans. Yockum said last week that Republicans should not cut taxes if it will shift the burden for services to property taxes and sales tax. Lawmakers will also need to craft a budget for the upcoming fiscal year before gaveling out of session. State officials projected on Friday that the revenue lawmakers have at their disposal will largely stay the same between this year and the next year, increasing by only 0.7%. Democrats said this week that they want the state to see the state put more money towards schools, housing, and environmental protection. Quote, "As we go through the process, we're going to be looking to see how do these budgets reflect the state's priorities," said House Minority Leader Jennifer Cornquist. Quote, "Not the priorities of the Republican governor, the Republican majority, but the priorities of our state." School safety. Two major proposals that are still alive after the final deal with improving school safety, including a proposal to create a licensing process for school staff to carry guns on campus. The proposals came in the wake of a shooting at Perry High School in January that left 11-year-old Amir Jolief and the school's principal, Dan Marburger, dead. House File 2586, which the House passed, would create a new permitting process that requires training before a school staff member can carry a gun on campus, if a school chooses to allow it. Lawmakers hope the bill will ease concerns from insurance companies about ensuring schools with armed staff. Another bill would create a grant program that schools can use to purchase guns and training for armed staff. That bill would also provide money for emergency communications, create new building standards, and create a pilot program for gun detection software at schools. Both bills are through the House and eligible for consideration in the Senate. But there's already things in law to allow those same safety measures to happen. So whether we need to make changes or not, that's what our committee will decide over the next few weeks, Whitver said. All right, friends, that looks like all the content that is new and local and regional to the Sunday paper. So I will now be switching over to the Saturday March 16th paper from this point forward. All right, headline for yesterday's paper. Community continues pulling together. Headline, 5 years after the Hornick flood. Subheadline, recovery continues after flood destroyed a majority of homes, from Hornick, Iowa. Thursday's rainfall across the area was not nearly heavy enough to raise flooding concerns, but since flooding in 2019 damaged a majority of the homes and buildings here, some Hornick residents would look anxiously towards the north anytime heavy rains fell. Thanks to a flood protection berm built in 2022, residents now have peace of mind that an unusually large rain event won't force them from their homes. Quote, I think a lot of people feel a lot safer. I know I do. Hornick Mayor Scott Mitchell said, what happened in 2019 will not happen again, and I think everyone in town understands that too. It's one of many milestones on the long road to recovery since March 14, 2019, when heavy rainfall and rapidly melting snow filled the West Fork River of the Little Sioux River and flowed over the tops of levees north and east of Hornick. Water flowed over the frozen ground into town, reaching depths of up to 4 feet on Main Street and forcing the 250 residents to evacuate. When allowed to return 3 days later, residents found their basins full of water, homes, and belongings damaged or ruined. Fast forward 5 years, and Hornick now stands behind an earthen berm surrounding the town's west, north, and east sides, with Iowa Highway 141 running along the south side. Awarded $2.1 million by the Iowa Flood Mitigation Board, Hornick built a berm 3 feet above the elevation of the 500-year flood mark. Had it been in place 5 years ago or in 1996, when a similar flood swamped the town, Hornick most likely wouldn't have had the water rushing through its streets and into its homes. Well, that was a great feeling when it was finally done, Mitchell said of the berm's fall 2022 completion. Hopefully, we'll never have to use it. It was a major step for the town still recovering. Streets damaged by heavy equipment rolling over freshly thawed ground beneath them during the flood cleanup still await repairs. Some homeowners had flood insurance, others didn't. Some received federal emergency relief dollars, others did not. That's meant some have yet to finish home restorations. Quote, that road to recovery after natural disaster is a long one, Mitchell said. After a lengthy process of jumping over regulatory hurdles with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, Mitchell said it's hoped that bids can be let for street repairs next month and work completed this year. Flood recovery has taken longer than Mitchell expected, but Hornick has stuck it out. He proudly points out that only 3 homes were vacated after the flood. Nearly everyone stayed to restore and rebuild. Quote, they didn't just walk away and be done with it, Mitchell said. It's, quote, it's pretty amazing how people can be resilient. A community spirit that developed as neighbors helped one another clean up after the flood also remains. Quote, we've had very good community support then and now still, and it's still very tight. It's still a very tight community, Mitchell said. Lessons were learned from the decisions made in the flood's aftermath, and that knowledge leaves Hornick better situated to deal with further future emergencies. Quote, if another natural disaster occurred, I think the council, mayor, and clerk would be better prepared from what we learned in 2019, and so would the residents, Mitchell said. Quote, you're not going to deter Mother Nature, just prepare for the next one, and hopefully you're better prepared than the last one. As recovery in Hornick winds down, preparedness continues. The next natural disaster could happen any time. For everyone's sake, here's hoping it's far off in the future. Amen to that. All right, let's turn back to the front of Saturday's paper. Headline, Iowa primary election matchups are set. June 4th will mark the first time Iowa 4th Congressional District Representative Randy Feenstra faces a primary challenger since taking office. The two-term incumbent from Hull will run against Sutherland resident Kevin Virgil, an Army veteran and former intelligence worker. Both candidates successfully filed before the Iowa 5 p.m. Friday deadline for the primary, as did Nevada insurance manager Ryan Melton, a Democrat who lost to Feenstra in the 2022 cycle. Virgil has said he doesn't believe the 36-county district is being represented by a, quote, true conservative. Former Representative Steve King, who lost to Feenstra in the 2020 GOP primary, is backing Virgil in the race. Melton won't see an opponent on the ballot, nor will most of the other Northwest Iowa candidates running for state and federal office. The state races. At the filing deadline, only House Representative Mike Sexton, Republican of Rockwell City, who was being primaried, Oldebolt resident Wendy Lou Larson is challenging Sexton, who represents House District 7. The district includes all of Sac, Calhoun, and Pocahontas counties and parts of Western Webster. Major cities in the district include Lakeview, Sac City, Lake City, Rockwell City, and Pocahontas. The fall will be a different matter as five incumbent state legislators will have opponents on the November 5th ballot. In Senate District 6, Jason Schultz, Republican of Schweizig, is competing with Harlan Libertarian David Davis for the second straight cycle. Schultz, who chairs the State Government Committee, defeated Davis in 2022 by earning 82.91% of the vote to 16.8%. The two are running again so soon because of redistricting. Senate District 6 includes the counties of Audubon, Carroll, Crawford, Ida, and Shelby. The first-term House District 1 Representative J.D. Scholten, Democrat of Sioux City, will square off against fellow Sioux Cityan Josh Steinhoff, Republican challenger. Scholten ran unopposed the last time out. A former professional baseball player, Scholten ran unsuccessfully for what is now Feenstra's seat in 2018 and 2020, nearly upsetting King in the former election. House District 1 covers all of Sioux City's west side as well as a portion of the north side. House District 1, Representative Bob Henderson, a Sioux City Republican in his first term, is being challenged by Democrat Jessica Lopez Walker, an enrolled member of the Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, who has degrees in psychology and art and has worked at FedEx. Lopez Walker declared her candidacy for Sioux City Council in 2023 but did not meet the filing deadline in that cycle. House District 2 covers northeast Sioux City and rural areas of northern Woodbury County, including the city of Lawton. Henderson won the seat by defeating incumbent Steve Hansen. Representative Tom Janney, the Republican representative for House District 3, is taking on Democrat Emma Buza of Warden. The Lamar's resident, who has been in office since 2019, served in the House District 5 prior to 2022. Leading up to the 2022 race, Iowa House District 4 Representative Skylar Wheeler, a fellow member of the GOP, was planning to take on Janney in the district, which is comprised of the northern half of Plymouth County and the southern half of Sioux County, but Wheeler changed his plans well before the primary. Representative Steve Holt, a Denison Republican, is seeing a bid from Dustin Durbin, a Democrat from Dow City, in House District 12, which stretches from Holstein down to Harlan. Holt ran unopposed in the last election. Other state candidates who have filed for the June 4th primary include District 2 Senator Jeff Taylor, Republican of Sioux Center, incumbent. District 4 Representative Skylar Wheeler, Republican of Hull, she's an incumbent. District 5 Representative Zach Deacon, Republican of Granville, who's also an incumbent. District 6 Representative Megan Jones, Republican of Sioux Falls, also an incumbent. And District 10 Representative John Wills, Republican of Spirit Lake, incumbent. And District 14 Representative Jacob Bossman, Republican of Sioux City. Earlier this month, Sioux City native Noah Weisler announced that he would run for House District 13, which includes all of Monona County, much of central and northern Woodbury County, southern and eastern Plymouth County, and portions of western Cherokee County. The seat is currently held by Ken Carlson, an Ottawa resident in his first term. Carlson previously announced that he would not run for re-election. All right, let's now turn to page A3 of Saturday's paper. Headline, Pharmacy Fined for Medication Error. A Sioux City pharmacy with a history of regulatory violations has been fined for a medication error that led to a life-threatening situation for a customer. The Iowa Board of Pharmacy alleges that on October 4, 2023, Greenville Pharmacy in Sioux City incorrectly filled a prescription for a customer who began taking the drug. 3 weeks later, the customer was treated in the emergency room of a hospital and was then admitted for what the board said was a life-threatening condition resulting from this medication error. Greenville Pharmacy was charged by the board with disposing an incorrect prescription, although the available public documents don't indicate whether the wrong drug or wrong dosage was dispensed. The records give no indication as to whether the customer recovered. As a result of the licensing board change, the Greenville Pharmacy agreed to have its license placed on probation for 2 years and agreed to pay a $2,500 civil penalty. All right, headline. United Way of Siouxland campaign raises $2.9 million from Sioux City. United Way of Siouxland raised $2.9 million for its 2024 campaign. United Way staff, supporters, and volunteers celebrated the achievement during an event at Buffalo Alice in downtown Sioux City Thursday night. Brian and Heather Crichton of CMBA Architects and Arena Fit served as this year's campaign chairs. Quote, thanks to your support, hundreds of Siouxland children are reading at grade level, families have access to healthy living supports and mental health treatment, and thousands of families in our community received the help they needed to become self-sufficient, the Crichton said in a statement. United Way of Siouxland President Heather Hennings emphasized how the organization, quote, takes the lead in identifying community challenges that affect us all. But our aim is to ensure that the generosity of our donors translates into tangible, measurable improvements in the lives of our neighbors, Hennings said. All right, next headline. Women United awards $94,450 to 8 Siouxland nonprofits. Women United of Siouxland on Thursday awarded $92,450 in funding grants to 8 local nonprofits serving Siouxland children. Haven House Family Services received a $2,256 program grant to provide for a therapeutic room where children can freely play while staff speak and advocate with their parents after a traumatic event has taken place. The goal is to break the cycle of re-traumatization by protecting them from hearing and reliving the event. Siouxland Mental Health Center received a $2,496 program to help expand the nonprofit group's parent-child interaction therapy program. The goal of the program is to help parents learn effective strategies to deal with their child's dysfunctional behavior. Sleep in Heavenly Peace received a Brighter Futures Award of $25,000 to support local volunteers who build, assemble, and deliver bunk beds to Siouxland children and families in need. The Warming Shelter receiving a Brighter Futures grant of $7,200 to provide a classroom and hygienic supplies to shelter children, along with age-appropriate toys and games. The items ensure children have educational access and enhanced developmental growth while staying at the shelter. The Mary J. Tralia Community House received a $4,998 Brighter Futures grant to provide preschool children with library lunchroom accommodations, which gives students more instruction time and frees up learning space. A privacy fence will protect children from observation by others while using the playground area. Big Brothers Big Sisters of Siouxland received a Brighter Futures Grant award of $18,000 to expand its Junior Bigs mentoring program at Hunt Elementary School. Students will benefit from mentoring with improved social and relationship skills as well as problem-solving abilities. Girl Scouts of Greater Iowa received a $6,950 Brighter Futures Grant to allow girls to participate in educational and social experiences without the financial burden often associated with such experiences. The activities include opportunities for the development of STEM skills, improved social abilities, mental and physical health, along with greater confidence in decision-making. Heartland Counseling Services received a $25,500 Brighter Futures Grant to provide at-risk youth with access to mental health program designed to improve mental health and resilience and the ability to form positive connections, provides quality mental health and substance abuse services to all ages in a tri-state area, regardless of insurance or residency status. The program is also intended to reduce substance abuse and other high-risk behaviors, enhance school attendance, and prevent justice involvement. Since 2006, Women United, part of the United Way of Siouxland, has awarded over $1.3 million to local nonprofit groups aimed at providing research-based, life-improving programs for Siouxland youth. All right, next article from the local section, page A4, and this is going actually on from noon to 4 today, if you're able to hear this broadcast in time for Sioux City area. Headline, Faces of Siouxland Coming to Convention Center. Celebrating the vibrant diversity of the community, the Faces of Siouxland Multicultural Fair is coming to the Sioux City Convention Center, 801 4th Street, from noon to 4 p.m. Sunday. That's today. Now in its 33rd year, Faces of Siouxland is the largest annual event organized by the Sioux City Human Rights Commission, according to its director, Karen Mackey. There will be more than 80 information booths, food offerings, a kid's space, and even a spot where children can pet a real-life bunny rabbit, she said. However, Mackey recommends that attendees park in the nearby Discovery parking ramp. Since St. Patrick's Day Parade will be passing right by the convention center, street parking won't be allowed around along the parade's route, she said. Yet Mackey is positive that the increased exposure will bring more traffic to Faces of Siouxland. People have come to expect a wonderful blend of music, dance, art, and food at our multicultural fair, she said. This year, in addition to the Indian tacos, as well as the Mexican and Asian foods, we may even have some corned beef and cabbage in time for St. Patrick's Day. After all, Faces of Siouxland is a way for us to recognize and celebrate the richness of Siouxland's multicultural tapestry, she added. Headline, St. Patrick's Day Returning. Sons and daughters of the Emerald Isle, as well as people who are simply Irish for a day, will be going green during the downtown Sioux City 16th Annual St. Patrick's Day Parade. The event will start at 3 p.m. Sunday on the corner of 4th and Iowa Streets, heading west and down 4th before ending on Water Street. More than 50 local organizations, businesses, and families will have floats in the parade, which is sponsored by MVS Metals. This is quite the change from Sioux City's first St. Patrick's Day, which was organized by founders Mac Dolan and Kelly Quinn in 2009. Quote, when Kelly and I informally started the parade, it was basically made up of cars and trucks driven by members of our respective families, Dolan said. Since then, Sioux City St. Patrick's Day Parade has grown into one of the biggest springtime celebrations in the area. Quote, we love seeing all the organizations, floats, and families come out to celebrate, Dolan said. Everyone's invited to wear green and be Irish on St. Patrick's Day. Headline, man pleads not guilty of abusing 13-year-old girl. A Sioux City man has pleaded not guilty of sexually abusing a 13-year-old girl. Jason Michael Harry, Jr., 19, entered his written plea Thursday in Woodbury County District Court to one count of second-degree sexual abuse. According to court documents, the girl was taken to a hospital February 24th after she had told her parents Harry had sexually assaulted her at a family friend's house in Sioux City on February 19th. During an interview with police, Harry admitted to having sexual contact with the victim and providing her with marijuana numerous times in January and February, court documents said. Harry was initially charged with distribution of a controlled substance to a minor, but that charge was dismissed by prosecutors. Headline, Sibley man found guilty of sexual abuse. A jury has found a Sibley man guilty of sexually abusing a child during a three-year period. Mitchell Duskin, 33, was found guilty Thursday of three counts of second-degree sexual abuse and one count of third-degree sexual abuse. He was found not guilty of one count of second-degree sexual abuse. Sentencing was scheduled for May 17th in Osceola County District Court. Duskin had sexual contact with a child who was under age 14 from about November 3rd, 2019 through November 12th, 2021. Headline, portion of 4th Street in Sioux City to close Tuesday. Tuesday morning, Sioux City's engineering division is closing 4th Street from Pier Street to Douglas Street. The closure will begin in the morning and has happened to allow a private contractor to complete work on an adjacent building, according to a press release from the city. A detour utilizing Pier Street, 3rd Street, and Douglas Street will be available during this closure, the release said. The city said it expects the street to reopen the same day. All right, let's turn to the week in Iowa, page A6, a recap of the news across the state from the past 7 days. And again, this is from the Saturday paper, so take that into mind. In the news, big bills left behind. This week marked a key deadline in the Iowa legislature, as bills that were not far enough along in the lawmaking process will no longer be eligible for consideration. There are ways for leaders to bring bills back, but it marks a key benchmark as lawmakers turn their attention to a smaller pool of legislation and begin to look at tax and budget policy. A number of high-profile bills did not advance past Friday's deadline. A bill defining man and woman in Iowa law, crimes for human smuggling of immigrants, and a proposal to allow birth control without a prescription in a set of conservative social studies curriculum were all among the bills that did not advance this year. Headline, Bill Limits Hemp THC Products. Iowa House lawmakers passed a bill this week to significantly limit the potency of hemp-derived THC products sold at shops and bars around the state. The bill would require that those products contain no more than 4 milligrams of THC per serving and 10 milligrams per package, which would disqualify most THC products sold at retailers in Iowa. Action on film tax incentives. Iowa lawmakers gave first approval to a bill that would reinstate a long-defunct tax rebate for film productions in Iowa. The previous program was repealed more than a decade ago after it was reported that $26 million in funds were improperly issued by the state. Lawmakers promised that there will be more oversight this time. Odds and ends. Candidate file. Several candidates filed their nomination papers to qualify for the ballot in Iowa's upcoming primary and general elections this week. Friday marked the deadline for candidates to file, and Democratic congressional challengers like Christian Bohannon in the 1st District, Sarah Cockery in the 2nd District, and Lannon Beckham in the 3rd District filed this week. School gun grants. Iowa House Republicans passed a bill this week that included an unfunded grant program to allow schools to purchase guns and training for staff to carry guns on campus. Should the program become law, it would be funded through a later state budget process. Immigration bill stopped. A bill that would have made it illegal to transport or harbor undocumented immigrants in certain situations will not move forward in the legislature after failing to pass a legislative deadline this week. Opponents worried it could lead to felonies for providing aid and housing to immigrants. Property taxes. Iowa property owners will receive a new letter in the mail this year showing them the current and proposed local property tax rates and the total dollars levied by residents, city, school, and county. The letter was required by a 2023 law that lawmakers hoped would increase transparency about property taxes. In the news, House votes for potential TikTok ban. Iowa's members of the U.S. House all joined a bipartisan vote this week on a bill that would ban TikTok from U.S. app stores unless the Chinese parent company ByteDance sells its U.S. assets. Lawmakers say the bill is necessary to prevent China from collecting data on Americans or using the app to influence public opinion. TikTok has characterized the move as an all-out ban on an attempt to suppress the free speech of its millions of users. The app directed its users to call members of Congress last week as a key committee was set to take a vote. Iowa's Ashley Hinson, who sits on the select committee that originated the bill, was seen on social media post personally answering off the office phone and explaining to a caller why she supported the bill. Massive fertilizer spill in Red Oak. An estimated 150 tons of liquid nitrogen fertilizer, about 265,000 gallons, leaked from a co-op in Red Oak this week and into the East Nishnabotna River. The Iowa DNR is still investigating the extent of the fish kill and other damage caused by the spill. Headline: Iowa has hundreds of impaired waters. Iowa has 576 segments of waterways that are, quote, impaired, according to a report from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The number represents more than half of the assessed streams, rivers, and lake segments in Iowa, but is down 21 from 2022. So I guess a little bit of good news there. All right, let's turn to the business section, or page A7 of today's paper. Get to know the new popcorn president. Headline: A Jolly Good Career. Subheadline: New American Popcorn President Has a Long Experience in Sales. From Sioux City, Steve Hoisenga, who has spent nearly his entire career and more than half his life to this point with the American Popcorn Company, is now engaged, along with others, in charting the 110-year-old company's future. Quote, our first job is to make sure we do what we're doing really well, Hoisenga said this week. Quote, so we need to continue with what we've got with the Jolly Time microwave items and our poly bag and jar items. And when you can do those as well as you can, and to keep all those consumers happy, that's definitely our first job. And then beyond that, we're actually working on strategic planning right now. Hoisenga, who turns 58 this month, stepped into the company's presidency back in January. The company held off on announcing his appointment until late last month, in parentheses, stepping into a role formerly held by Gary Smith. Gary Smith and cousin Carlton, who remain on the American Popcorn Board of Directors, have stepped away from the company's day-to-day operations. The Smiths were great-grandsons of Claude H. Smith, who founded the American Popcorn Company in 1914. At the same time as Hoisenga's promotion, Edward Ted Townley was promoted to Senior Vice President of Operations and Treasurer, and David Sitzman became Senior Vice President of Production. The three together, Hoisenga said, have about 85 years with the company, collectively. A child of Morningside, Hoisenga attended East High School and graduated in 1984. He studied marketing at the University of Iowa, and for about a year and a half after his graduation, he lived in Minneapolis, where he worked as a salesman in the direct mail industry. In 1990, he moved back to Sioux City to take a job with American Popcorn as a regional sales manager. Quote, we sell in all 50 states and customers in all 50 states, Hoisenga said. So as a regional sales manager, I have a territory and would travel every other week to some part of the country to sell Jolly Time popcorn to grocery stores and club stores and mass merchandisers, that kind of thing. He joined the company a handful of years after the introduction of a product line that became a mainstay, microwave popcorn. Jolly Time got into the microwave popcorn segment relatively early in the 1980s, right as the American kitchen was being reoriented around the microwave oven. The 1997 launch of their iconic Blasto Butter further goosed sales. Quote, I think microwave popcorn makes Jolly Time more of a national brand than it was before then, Hoisenga said. Around the same time as microwave popcorn was coming into its own, American Popcorn began exporting. Today, the company exports to more than 35 countries, Hoisenga said. Its products are sold in all 50 states. About 15 years ago, Hoisenga was promoted to Vice President of Sales. Roughly 4 years ago, that role became Vice President of Sales and Marketing. Quote, this is a sales-driven company and has always been, Hoisenga said, so I grew up in that kind of culture. For all that Jolly Time is ubiquitous on grocery store shelves, American Popcorn itself is a relatively small player in a packaged food industry dominated by colossal firms that have ballooned over the years through mergers and acquisitions. Quote, they're over 100 times larger than we are, Hoisenga said. The privately held American Popcorn, buoyed by Jolly Time's name recognition, employs 180-odd workers and hasn't strayed from the core product. Well, we compete against some of the biggest food companies in the world, Conagra, Campbell's, Hershey. Those are all competitors of ours, Susinga said. So yeah, it's a challenge, but you know, our size lets us be more nimble and more flexible, and we can react to things a little more quickly. All right, let's now turn to the opinion section of today's paper for some Siouxland voices. It looks like we got two letters to the editor. Headline, many take our hard-fought freedoms for granted. The letter writer writes, 250 years ago, there was no United States of America. There were no Republicans, no Democrats, no red or blue states. There were people who wanted independence. So with that in mind, the Declaration of Independence was drawn up, signed, and the Revolutionary War was fought and won. And with independence came freedom. Now, fast forward 250 years, imagine what it would be like to be able to talk to those people enjoying freedom for the first time. Armed with our knowledge, what would they tell us? Well, nobody knows. They might say, don't look at your leaders in terms of party. It's not important if your leader is female or male. Don't look at that person as if being black, brown, or white. They say, with youth comes inexperience, with age comes wisdom. Possibly they would tell us to remember that they gave us freedom, and freedom has been attacked and has prevailed for many generations. I think they would tell us to look around the world and would see hundreds of millions of people who would gladly trade places with us. In closing, I feel they would say the single most important quality in a leader is one who will do everything possible to keep America a free country. Future generations yet unborn deserve all the freedoms many of us take for granted. Signed, Galen Brawl of Manila, Iowa. And the next letter is titled, What Does the Rest of the World Think of the United States? And the letter writer writes, quote, I wonder how the rest of the world views the circus act that has become the political situation in the United States. Do the tunnel vision Trump Republicans or anything goes Democrats ever wonder what the rest of the world thinks of them? The brother and son of the president have enriched themselves through political nepotism. The president and former president flout the law in the courts, whether for personal malfeasance or by forgiving student debt when the Supreme Court ruled that student debt cannot be forgiven. The January 6th and George Floyd riots, which resulted in extensive property damage, occurred because of criminal behaviors normalized by the president or former president. Public schools no longer strive for a first-rate education and pursue the Bush doctrine of no child left behind or diversity, equity, and inclusion. The invasion of illegal aliens has not stopped because name-calling is apparently more important than problem-solving. Indonesia is the fourth most populous nation in the world. As they plan to become a world power, who will they emulate? The United States or Communist China? All right, let's now turn to page 813 of today's paper. Headline, Sioux City PD moving speed cams. Subheadline, Cheyenne Boulevard, Christie Road to get cameras. The Sioux City Police Department is in the process of relocating its two speed cameras to the 2800 block of Cheyenne Boulevard and the 5200 block of Christie Road. The speed cameras, which are sometimes referred to as kiosks, resemble large ATM machines. They are expected to be operational at the new locations on Wednesday. The cameras were initially placed in the 3000 block of Floyd Boulevard and the 3300 block of Hamilton Boulevard and began recording data at both of those locations on June 3rd of 2022. The cameras also spent time in the 3400 block of Military Avenue, 2900 block of Transit Avenue, 4700 block of South Lakeport Street, and 3100 block of Lincoln Way, and 3100 block of Myrtle Street. The kiosks were provided by traffic camera vendor Redflex Traffic Systems, an Arizona-based firm that has contracted with the city for several years to provide automated cameras to photograph motorists speeding or running red lights. Radar detects the speed at which a vehicle is traveling. When a vehicle goes over a set speed, the mobile camera is triggered. After a violation is recorded, the footage is sent to a database. An officer with the police department then reviews the violation and decides whether to approve or disapprove it. The civil penalty for excessive speed over the posted speed limit is $100 and up. Speed and red light camera violations are not reported to the state that issued the violator's license or their insurance company. And the next story, headline, man pleads not guilty of armed robbery at Come and Go. A Sioux City man has pleaded not guilty of armed robbery of a Morningside convenience store. 13 Seram, age 29, entered his written plea Thursday in Woodbury County District Court to charges of first-degree robbery, assault while participating in a felony, intimidation with a dangerous weapon, felon in possession of a firearm, and two counts of aggravated assault. Serum is accused of entering Come and Go at 1925 South Lakeport Street on January 25th, brandishing a gun, demanding money, and pistol whipping the clerk in the face before leaving the store with approximately $360. He then fled the business on foot. According to court documents, a witness drove after Serum, who fired shots at the witness's vehicle at least twice. He was arrested February 28th after police investigation. According to court documents, he was preparing to fly to his native Hawaii later that night. Serum had been arrested February 21st at the conclusion of a high-speed chase that reached speeds above 110 miles per hour through Morningside. He was charged with eluding second-degree criminal mischief and operating while intoxicated and had bonded out of jail prior to his arrest for the alleged robbery. He pleaded not guilty to those charges on March 8th. He also faces charges related to the November high-speed chase. All right, continuing on from page A13 of Saturday's paper, headline, Iowa lawmakers table immigration enforcement bills. House, Senate, and GOP leaders unable to agree on proposals. Two Republican bills relating to immigration enforcement in Iowa were halted this week after they failed to garner support from fellow State House Republicans. An Iowa House Republican bill that would have created a new state crime of human smuggling and penalized individuals who transport or harbor undocumented immigrants in some cases, a proposal that was opposed by advocates for charities and shelters, was stopped in the Republican-led Iowa Senate. And an Iowa Senate bill that would have required businesses to use the E-Verify program to ensure all employees are legal U.S. residents, which was opposed by business groups, will not advance in the Republican-led Iowa House. The Republicans who chair the Iowa House and Iowa Senate Judiciary Committees confirmed their proposals legislative desks on Wednesday. Representative Steve Holt, a Republican from Denison, who chairs the House Judiciary Committee, said a significant concern he had with the E-Verify proposal is that on a second offense, it would have revoked a business's license to operate in Iowa. Quote, that doesn't seem like a reasonable approach, Holt told reporters Wednesday. The E-Verify bill, Senate File 108, earlier this year passed the Iowa Senate on a 30-17 vote, with only Republicans supporting it. Quote, there's also people concerned that if E-Verify puts an additional burden on businesses, there's also concern that E-Verify doesn't necessarily do what people believe it does in terms of verifying a worker's legitimate right to be employed, Holt added. Those are concerns that I have on my side. State Senator Brad Zaun, a Republican from Urbandale who chairs the Senate Judiciary Committee, said the potential for unintended consequences was the chief concern for the House-passed human smuggling bill. Quote, there were some unintended consequences with the bill and it needed work. So that's why I pulled the bill, Zaun told reporters. Quote, in the bill's language, it was my interpretation, as well as some of the people on the committee, that there were some unintended consequences. Advocates had expressed concern that the bill could penalize charities and shelters that attempt to aid immigrants. Those advocates said they did not always know an immigrant's legal status before offering them help. House Republicans had attempted to address those concerns by placing in the bill language that said arrests could not be made at a church, shelter, or school. And Holt said he expressed a willingness to amend the bill to make the language more palatable to Senate Republicans. The bill, House File 2608, passed the House last week on a 60-32 vote with only Republican support. The bill also prohibits undocumented immigrants from receiving public assistance. That prohibition is already in federal law. Holt said he found it deeply concerning that the bill did not advance in the Senate and said he will consider adding language to another immigration-related bill that is still eligible for consideration. But the bottom line is that our law enforcement needs to have tools when ICE, U.S. Customs and Immigration Enforcement, refuses to cooperate to be able to deal with human smuggling and trafficking that's going on coming from the invasion on our southern border, Holt said. Quote, I'm extremely disappointed that they chose not to advance that legislation. All right, friends. Well, that brings us to the end of our time together for IRIS. So I hope you all have a wonderful week. Be kind to yourselves and, if you can, someone else. Take care. Bye-bye.